today on No Limits, in partnership with our colleagues at Side Effects Public Media, we'll continue our community conversation about important public health issues. We'll talk about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality. My guests are Donetta G. Weiler with Community Health, Dr. Camuel Wright with CareSource, and journalist Giles Bruce. Please join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our community conversation about important public health issues. Today we're going to be talking about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Donetta G. Weiler with Community Health, Dr. Camuel Wright with CareSource, and journalist Giles Bruce. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you very much, John, for the opportunity.
It's good to have you here. So let's put this in some perspective first by defining, you know, the scope of the problem here. I mean, I'll start with Donetta on this. I mean, when we talk about a higher rate, what are we talking about?
Well, you know, when you look at the Midwest, we are the highest state in the Midwest when it comes to infant mortality. And I think understanding what infant mortality is that piece is important first. It's the death of a baby before his or her first birthday. And when you look at our rate, the infant mortality rate is an estimate of the number of infant deaths for every 1,000 live births. And so in Indiana in 2016, the rate was 7.5, which was, again, highest for all Midwest states. The lowest state was Minnesota at 5.1, which is close to the national average. So
we were half again, mm-hmm, as much. Dr. Wright, do we have any idea why this might be?
There are several factors that come into play. We know that the primary causes of infant mortality include preterm deliveries as well as low birth weight babies. We know that some babies die of sudden unexplained infant death syndrome, and we lose some babies to congenital anomalies, so abnormalities that they are born with. The causes are clear. I think what we struggle with is trying to impact those causes. We know that one of the largest factors contributing to low birth weight babies is smoking. And unfortunately, Indiana has a very large proportion of pregnant women who still smoke. About 14% of Hoosier moms smoke during pregnancy, and we know that that's twice the national average. And unfortunately, that's one of the potentially avoidable situations that cause poor pregnancy outcomes.
Giles, what has your reporting told you about this problem and its causes?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's told me that it's a complicated problem, a complex one. There are, she just outlined the causes, but the risk factors are, quite numerous. They can be things, like poverty. There are a lot of socioeconomic factors, social determinants of health, you might say. Things like, living near pollution, living in, food deserts where it's hard to access, fresh, healthy food, the stress of living in, violent, poverty-stricken neighborhoods can be a factor. then there are some that are just, medical anomalies. But we know that, if you look at, other countries, this isn't a problem unique to Indiana. This is a nationwide problem, essentially. If you look at some countries that are near the top, like Finland, which has about two infant deaths per 1,000 live births compared to around 5 or 6 for the U.S., they have, so they don't have some of these, social problems that we struggle with in the U.S.
Giles, I'm going to stay with you for a second. The numbers are alarming. I mean, at least by the things that I've consulted, we're 45th in the country when it comes to infant mortality, 46th when it comes to maternal mortality. And, my understanding, I haven't studied as closely as the three of you have, is this is not just a recent phenomenon either, that this has been a persistent problem for Indiana. Could you put that in some perspective, please?
Essentially it's, the rate hasn't changed in quite a few years. Compared to, say 100 years, things have changed quite a bit. In the series I did about infant mortality, I profiled the city of East Chicago, which is, up where I work in northwest Indiana, and they have traditionally had the highest infant mortality rate in the state. But 100 years ago, in Chicago, more than half the babies didn't make it to their first birthdays. Now in that city, it's 16 per 1,000 live births compared to over 500 100 years ago. So obviously things have changed, but it's been in recent years it's been pretty stagnant. The state has wanted to do something about this for a few years now, and in 2013, then Governor Mike Pence said it was his top public health priority. But since then, even the rate has remained pretty unchanged. It was 7.1 in 2014, 7.3 in 2015, 7.5 in 2016, then back to 7.3 last year.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So we've talked about some of the causes, and Giles sort of anticipated my next line of questioning, which, is not surprising for a journalist, I guess. And that is, I'll throw this one to Dr. Wright first. Are there parts of the state where this is a larger problem than others? I mean, he just mentioned East Chicago, where the rate, it sounds like, is twice the state average and a little more than three times the national average. Are there other places that are real problem spots?
There are several counties that are problem spots. There are counties located in the Midwestern section as well as the Northeastern section of the state and farther down south in the state that are problematic. One of the main reasons that we see geographical differences is for something that we call maternal care deserts. And those are counties in which there is little to no obstetrical care. And women are required to travel miles, maybe even hours, to get OB care. What we know, unfortunately, is that in Indiana, there are 25 counties that are considered maternal care deserts. So when we talk about this issue, we really need to talk about access and availability in those counties and how we improve that to improve neonatal outcomes.
Is it a rural versus urban divide, or does it cut across those traditional understandings here in Indiana?
In Indiana, these are primarily rural counties that we see that have insufficient access to prenatal care. When we look at the country as a whole, it's not necessarily rural. There are several urban communities in which the hospitals have closed in those areas for various reasons, most of which are economic, and those create the same situation of being maternal care deserts and unfortunately lead to poor outcomes.
But obviously, Donetta, East Chicago is not a rural area. So it's the rules in some ways are also defined by exceptions here. I mean, are the things that they have in common?
Yeah, I mean, I would say when we look at our home area, one statistic that was shocking to us is that in Marion County, there are 13 zip codes that account for 24% of Indiana's overall infant mortality. When you look at the availability of health care in Indianapolis and Marion County, access should not be an issue. And so that's where our organization, along with our peers, are really working to try to figure out how do we come together? Because if we can take care of 1/4 of the infant mortality, then we can start working to get out to those other areas that are maternal health care deserts.
I'm going to stay with you on this. Are there parts of the country that are doing this? Well, obviously, there have to be parts of the country that are doing this better than we are. What parts, what states are dealing with this problem more effectively than Indiana?
You know, I have to say,
obviously 44 and 45 of them are, but yeah.
Yeah, but I still have to say overall, as a country, we're struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I think we see in some areas that things are improving in other states. But I think a key point that at some point we'll discuss today is really it's a disparity issue. If you look at our white infant mortality in Indiana, we're below national average. A sad statistic that actually hit my mailbox this morning was that our black infant mortality rose in 2017. And with all due respect to Mr. Giles, as you look at all of those different pieces that he talked about, you can put everything out equally on a plate with a person, their socioeconomic standing, education, background, and wealth, however you look at it. But at the bottom, when you even those out, a white woman's chance of losing her baby is much less than a black woman. It's been 2.5 times different over the past several years. And so that's a focus that we really have is how do we impact that to get the disparity to decrease?
Why is that? Go ahead. Yeah, Dr. Wright.
If I can just add to that, I would say that we see that same trend in maternal mortality well. So in Indiana, a black woman has twice the risk of dying during her pregnancy as a white woman. And in some parts of the country, that risk is 3 to 4 times that of her white counterparts. So
is that a poverty issue, though, or is that no, I see Donetta shaking her head.
It's a struggle for me because I, you know, as a white woman myself, I just, the color of my skin should not give my baby a better chance. And if you take a black woman that is at the same level as me with wealth, with education, her chances of dying and her baby's chances of dying is 2 to 2.5 times greater.
So I think that there are multiple factors involved. I think that there's genetic predisposition to certain conditions that play a role. I definitely think that environment does play a role, although, as Donetta mentioned, even when you normalize those things, there's still a higher risk. I think there's more research and understanding that is necessary so that we can properly address and hopefully eliminate the disparities moving forward.
And can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, I should have obviously mentioned race because that is you know, a big part of this, if not the, you know, the biggest. But I had quoted a professor of pediatrics at Northwestern who's looked into this issue, and he was talking about he basically said when you know, black women come to the U.S. from Africa or the Caribbean, their birth outcomes are similar to the white population, but when the girls grow up in the U.S. by the next generation, their birth outcomes are similar to those of the general African American population. So he was theorizing that the stress caused by racial discrimination in this country could actually be playing a role in birth outcomes.
And I would add, it's also I would be remiss not to say it's also an issue in other races. Hispanic, we're seeing similar trends, just not as great.
This is a puzzle, clearly, and we're gonna. Fortunately, we've got some time to try to unravel it, and that is what we're going to do. If you are just joining us, we're talking about a couple of complicated public health issues. The fact that Indiana has alarmingly high rates for both infant mortality and maternal mortality. My guests for the discussion are Danetta G. Weiler with Community Health, Dr. Camuel Wright with CareSource, and journalist Giles Bruce. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're continuing our community conversation about important public health issues. This ongoing conversation is a product of our partnership with our colleagues at Side Effects Public Media. Today we're talking about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality. My guests are Donetta G. Weiler with Community Health, Dr. Camuel Wright with CareSource, and journalist Giles Bruce. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can take the old-fashioned route and do what a caller who didn't want to go on the air has done and call us at 866-476-3881. This caller said, does the panel have any statistics regarding secondhand smoke and the effect on this problem? I'll start with you on that one, Dr. Wright.
We certainly know that secondhand smoke does affect pregnancies. I don't know that I have exact statistics because I don't know that we have clear statistics, but we do know that secondhand smoke negatively affects pregnancies. And we also know that secondhand smoke contributes to a poor environment after delivery that could potentially lead to sudden unexpected infant death syndrome. So certainly not a good thing for babies to be exposed to in utero or outside.
So I want to come back to this this puzzle that we were dealing with, the fact that because it would seem to confound all of the ways we try to solve problems, which is by, you know, attempting to level the playing field, make sure that all people have access to the same resources, medical and otherwise. But if I understand what we're hearing here is that even if you do that, African-American women and their babies are still at twice the risk of Western European children, American. Dr. Wright, you're putting your hand up. So I guess let's dive into that a little more.
I certainly don't think that we want to spread the message that it's hopeless. There are definitely opportunities to help to level the playing field. One we've touched on already, which is access and availability, making sure that there is high quality care in all geographic areas or access to that. So understanding what the barriers are to obtaining good quality health care. Is it transportation? If so, then let's try to figure out ways that we can help to provide transportation. CareSource, we have an unlimited transportation benefit that will allow moms to receive transportation to any of their appointments. So we need to do more of that sort of thing as a society. We also need to figure out where the food deserts are and improve access to quality food to help with nutrition before pregnancy and during pregnancy. We want to make sure that there are providers available to help with other conditions that may impact pregnancy, such as substance use. We want to make sure that there are appropriately trained providers available who have the capacity to treat these moms. So there are several ways that I believe we can impact the numbers, even though we don't know all the reasons for the disparities.
Giles, what's your reporting? How has it led you to, has it enabled you to make any kind of educated guesses as to why this anomaly might be in place?
Yeah, like I said, it's this isn't a problem that's unique to Indiana by any means. It kind of goes along with some of the struggles that the U.S. has, compared to other developed nations, such as our life expectancy and how that has getting worse. We're the only developed country where that's happened. We have some of the worst health outcomes in the world, despite spending the most amount of money on health care, essentially having the best medical care and technology. It's just we just have more disparities than other developed nations, and that's something that's going to be hard to fix. But the state is doing some things. I mean, my paper had a story today about some things the governor is going to be asking the General Assembly to approve next year. Those are going to be requiring pregnant women to essentially be screened to ask about their drug use. The other thing is to give women with high-risk pregnancies a publicly funded navigator who will essentially help them navigate the healthcare system, which we all know can be pretty difficult.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about why Indiana has high rates of infant and maternal mortality. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Or you can do what a listener named Elvin has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Elvin, you're on the air.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
I'm the chief executive officer of Indiana Health Centers, and we operate 10 health centers in 7 different Indiana counties. As a federally qualified health center system. And years ago, back in the late 80s, I was the director of maternal child health care for Marion County Health Department when we had the highest black infant mortality rate of any city with population of 500,000 in this country. And the problem back then was people just didn't realize what the importance was of getting prenatal care or not having access to it. Well, you say, well, there's a health center not too far away, but, they need transportation. They don't have any money. So a lot of those problems have been, I wouldn't say resolved, but improved in that the black infant mortality rate back in 1984 was 24 or 25, extremely high. But what we're experiencing now, we have some health centers in rural areas. The most significant one is in Spencer, Indiana, Owen County. And what I've learned is that women who live in Owen County, a third of them don't even get prenatal care in the first trimester of pregnancy. I think the Luger Foundation has done a lot of study on Western Indiana rural counties. And what they've discovered is that women just don't have the transportation to get to where they need to go. And maybe they don't understand the importance of it, but it's caused a lot of high up mortality rate. Then the other thing I wanted to bring up, and I think maybe you guys have talked about it a little bit, but the healthcare providers in rural areas, the hospitals in rural areas of Indiana and across the country are experiencing some really significant financial problems. And I just learned this week, actually it was last week, I learned that Fayette County Regional Hospital went into bankruptcy, And part of the result of that bankruptcy is they have, and that's in Connersville, part of that result is that they have had to eliminate prenatal care and delivery services. So where are women that live in Fayette County going to go to get prenatal care? But the hospital can't afford to provide it. So, and then the last thing I want to bring up, and then I'll listen to you guys, but Indiana ranks 49th state in the country on the per capita money it spends on public health, which I think is something that just has must be addressed. And I think that women, pregnant women and little kids, are usually the most powerless that experience the worst parts of the lack of care availability. So that's the end of what I wanted to bring to your program. I really appreciate what you guys are doing today. I think this is a really high concern issue.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing the information and helping to move the conversation along. Donetta, I saw you nodding your head up and down almost like a sewing machine needle there, so I'm going to give you the first crack at that one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everything he said, I'm in agreement with. I think the access to healthcare is so important. What we're finding is it's the education to the importance of prenatal care. Again, we've been talking with patients, having conversations with them, and you will hear cultural differences in, well, this is how we have been taught when to receive healthcare, and we have, you know, whether it be church doulas or midwives in the community. And when I use the word midwife, midwives are amazing, but there are also what we call lay midwives that, you know, just work within the community that these patients may not be actually getting into a system to kind of achieve that health care. And so to his point about the governor's agenda and working to try to get a health navigator, part of that comes from healthcare organizations saying we want to partner with these community midwives and doulas and have them as part of the system. So we're giving the same message because what we find is it comes down to trust. They have to trust us to come to us to care for them. And many times, again, another scenario may be that when a woman has to decide between going to work and coming to an appointment, what's going to come out on top? And going to work and keeping the roof over her other children's head or her head so she can prepare for her unborn child might be important. So we have to look within our system to say, are we offering the right hours, the right access for the patients? And for that means we got to listen to them.
I want to get to the last point that Elvin raised because you know, at some level, this is going to sound much more flippant than I intend it to be. But are we getting what we pay for here? I mean, if we're investing 49th, you know, we're at the bottom of the barrel, basically, when it comes to an investment in public health. Should we be shocked that we see numbers such as this one? I'm going to start with Donetta on that one, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on it, okay?
I think we are getting what we invest. I think if we want a healthier community, we've got to put the money in to get there. Just across the board, we have got to be willing to support programs that support the healthcare community and the patients that need that healthcare. I think it's been proven by the states that invest more. You see better healthcare outcomes.
Giles.
Yeah, I think that is, it's pretty obvious that we invest such little money and get these poor results. In the latest data or data I quoted in the project I did last year, Indiana spent $41 per capita in state and federal dollars on public health funding, while the top state, Alaska, spent $261. U.S. average is 94. So obviously that's something that Indiana lacks and something that I feel doesn't really get talked about much.
So, Dr. Wright, that sounds like, by my math, we're spending about 45% of the national average. Then what are the impacts of that?
Well, the impacts are less access to care. As the caller mentioned, hospitals that can't afford to keep their doors open in areas of critical need, less money for funding community programs that would help to educate moms on the importance of prenatal care, as well as the potential complications that could come from not achieving significant visits and not getting adequate care. I think the good news is that infant mortality and maternal mortality are priorities for Governor Holcomb. So I think that what I hope, I'll put it that way, is that we can look forward to more light being shed on this issue and hopefully more dollars being allocated to helping to address some of the things that we're discussing here today.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about infant and maternal mortality today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what a caller who didn't want to go on the air has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. This caller asks, what are the statistics and relations in relation to procedures for infant and maternal deaths, talking about abortions and C-sections in that context. Dr. Wright?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I think, and I could be wrong, if the caller wants to call back in and clarify, but whether these questions are also factors, whether C-sections are more dangerous procedures. And I'm presuming that that is asking whether the abortion numbers are included in any way. Donetta is shaking her head no on abortions, but how about the C-section question?
We do know that C-sections do come with more risks to the mom. We all are making an effort, as directed by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, to limit cesarean sections only to when they are absolutely necessary. And there's continual work to lower those numbers because we do know that there are risks involved. I don't know that that plays a significant role part in the infant mortality statistic, however.
So let me ask this. As part of the challenge here in getting people to confront, and we even talked about this a little bit before we went on the air, those of us who are in the studio, that because this subject is fraught with, in addition to obviously the medical and life risks, so much emotional risk too, is it difficult to get people to confront it and to consider what we are doing? Donetta?
You know, I struggle a little bit. And I mean, I think my answer would be no. I think part of it is it's been difficult to get the conversation started. But what I have found is when you get the people in the room, people are engaged in this because who doesn't want to save babies? You know, in a recent event that we did, we shared in 2016, 623 babies died. That was more than 50 babies every month, 12 babies every week, and 3,000 lives lost over 5 years. It's enough to fill 42 school buses. When you put those statistics out there, I have not met a group that doesn't say, what do I do to help? I was at a meeting this morning, and that was their point. Tell me an action item to help. I think the problem is it's so big, and there's so many different things we can do. We've got to break it down and start, again, working together across the state to come up with that solution.
I guess where I was going with that is, in the reporting I've done years ago on sudden infant death syndrome, for example, one of the constant refrains I heard from parents who had been through that is, we had no idea how many people, because it's something people just don't talk about. How important is it to start the conversation, Dr. Wright?
I think it's critical to start that conversation. If we are going to talk about sudden unexpected infant death syndrome, there are certainly things that we can educate parents to do to make their environment safer for babies, to make sure that babies are put to sleep in a proper manner, all of which will lessen the risk of an unexpected death. So I think it's critical for us to be able to educate the community at large about things that they can do.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality. My guests are Danetta G. Weiler with Community Health, Dr. Camuel Wright with CareSource, and journalist Giles Bruce. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today as part of our ongoing community conversation about important public health issues that we do in partnership with our colleagues at Side Effects Public Media about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality. My guests are Danetta G. Weiler with Community Health, Dr. Camuel Wright with CareSource, and journalist Giles Bruce. So I realize, as we've been talking, most of the focus of our conversation has been on the question of infant mortality. We haven't focused as much on maternal mortality, and I want to make sure that we don't leave the mothers out of this, because that is of crucial importance, and in some ways how we're doing even worse in regard to them than we are in regard to the children. Giles, are the some of the reasons for that? Do they track the ones for infant mortality, or are there any others that we should be including in this discussion?
I haven't done as much reporting on maternal mortality as I've done on infant mortality, but from what research I've done, these are pretty intertwined issues. The solutions might be a little different, but they essentially come down to the health of the mother, to making sure the mother is healthy going into pregnancy, and then remaining and staying healthy during pregnancy. This goes back to reducing things like obesity, smoking, drug use. So when women are ready to conceive, they're healthy, and then once the women do get pregnant, making sure they can get to those prenatal care appointments, making sure they have and can easily sign up for insurance, and get quality health care. And Indiana last year passed a law to implement perinatal levels of care, which essentially means that women will give birth in the proper facilities that have the proper tools to care for them, depending on how risky of a pregnancy they have. And that's something that's going to, in theory, help the health of both the mother and the baby.
Dr. Wright, are the same causes for both?
The causes are a bit different. They are certainly overlap, as Giles mentioned, but the main causes of maternal mortality include obstetrical emergencies such as hemorrhaging or hypertensive emergencies, which are extremely high blood pressure, sepsis, which is infection, embolism. There's both pulmonary embolism and amniotic embolism, and then finally cardiovascular conditions. So going back to the previous comments, it's important that all hospitals be prepared for obstetrical emergencies, and there are several different ways that we can talk to, we could talk about in terms of preparedness, but it's also very important for a woman to seek care at a hospital that has the appropriate facilities for her particular situation.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Indiana's high rates of infant and maternal mortality. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jeannie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jeannie, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for your program today.
Sure.
For a good deal of my working career, I did who gets paid and how much in the medical industry. Excuse me.
Certainly.
And I think if the numbers were known, which they're not, everyone would be astounded at how high they are. and they are rising as we speak. So to me, knowing the industry from that end, I think money is the driver. And I thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Thank you very much. So, Donetta, how much does money drive this whole discussion or this issue?
Well, I mean, I think access to funds will open more programs. I'm, you know, as far as how much who gets paid and what, I mean, I guess I'm was a little confused if that's internally or just the system. I think the healthcare systems, the managed care entities, this is a problem we're all working on to try to resolve, because at the end of the day, it really costs us more. When we have poor health, the cost of care is greater. And so this is a time when we're seeing a collaborative effort to really come together to figure out how can we improve things.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Kevin, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Kevin writes, systemic racism is real in Indiana. Many citizens and politicians see policy decisions as plays in a zero-sum game. Health, both personal and financial, is not a zero-sum game. Discretion is used as a weapon against Black and brown Americans and for Caucasian Americans. I want to get everybody's thoughts on that, because if I understand Kevin's question or implied question here, because it's really more a comment, it is that that we're not necessarily looking at health care, and particularly public health, in the right way as, you know, for lack of a better term, a right, something that should be afforded to all people as a condition of their citizenship, if not their humanity. Is that part of the problem here, Dr. Wright?
Is there racism in Indiana? Absolutely. But do I think that that's a major factor in the health disparities that we're seeing? I would say no. I think that there are very real organic issues that cause African-American women to be at higher risk for poor pregnancy outcomes. And I think that there's been a huge collaborative effort from multiple sectors, the government, providers, and managed care entities, to try to come together and to figure out how we address these disparities. So I think as a whole, you know, we're all moving in the right direction and the same direction. And I don't know that I see racism in 2018 as being the predominant driving factor.
Can I
Giles,
jump in?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I, you know, I'm not sure, you know, like she said, that it's, you know, modern racism that is driving these things. But, you know, historical racism obviously plays a role. You know, I looked at the, I found this heat map made by the University of Virginia that showed where the most, you know, segregated communities were in Indiana, and they correlated with the places with the highest, you know, infant mortality rates. You know, places like, you know, Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, Evansville. So that's, you know, things like racial segregation, obviously, you know, are pretty, you know, historical in nature, and that could be what the caller is getting at.
Dr. Wright.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And I think that historical racism plays a role in trust of the healthcare system and willingness to seek care when necessary. So there is definitely segments of the community that don't feel that hospitals and practitioners have their best interest in mind and don't feel that their situation is properly understood. So I do think that there are remnants of the past that that contribute to some of the behaviors that we're seeing.
And I would add to that, you know, agreeing with what has been said here, is that sometimes the discussion is hard to get started, because when you talk about the disparities, the individuals that can help you solve this get concerned that it is going to appear that they're racist because there are disparities, when really, again, it's cultural, it's genetic dispositions between different races. And so, you know, changing that language in that we are different people. How do we address those needs between different ethnicities is important. And because we have the conversation, doesn't is not calling out that it's racism.
I'm going to ask here because I've got a full phone bank of callers and a ton of emails and other questions that way. I'm going to ask both our listeners and the panel to try to be as concise as possible so we give as many people a chance to join the conversation as possible. We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Carrie saying, do you have statistics on safe sleep and the risks of SIDS? Dr. Wright.
So we know that safe sleep is critical, and as we mentioned earlier, it is a contributing factor to sudden unexplained infant death syndrome. Just to review what safe sleep is, it is important that infants are put in a crib with a firm mattress, alone, on their backs, with no toys or pillows or other things in the crib that might obstruct the baby's breathing. I think that is a huge educational message that we need to get out. And if more parents understood this, perhaps we could impact those deaths.
Gotten a question or comment from a tweet from a listener named Sandy. And again, you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Sandy writes, the comment about the governor's new ideas, asking women about their drug use, the Republican response frequently blames the victim. How about not being 49th in public health spending? I mean, is that a more practical way to solve this problem, Danetta?
No, I mean, I think there's been a lot of work around the substance use, and we're in a crisis right now. And what we have found is by asking the questions, it's, you know, according to the five P's, you're asking about history, family history, eventually getting to the actual patient if they have recent use or history. What we have found is it opens the door for them to discuss it. It's not a blame game. It's a disease. And so then we want to help treat that. And so I think it's a part of the puzzle to help us correct this issue.
We're talking about infant mortality and maternal mortality on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Ryan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ryan, you're on the air.
Yeah. In reference to safe sleep, I've had a few children myself, and I know that I've never been shown or, you know, introduced the proper way to have your child sleep at night when leaving the hospital. Is there some type of initiative to roll this program out, or can it be done?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for the call, Ryan.
I believe that most of the hospitals and healthcare systems are shedding quite a bit of light on safe sleep because that is one of the things that we can impact that helps to improve babies' outcomes. So I think that there are huge initiatives that are in place to educate parents before they take their newborn home about proper sleep.
Yeah, I would tell you our system gives cribs out to make sure they're sleeping alone. They educate in the room, and we make sure we model that in the hospital.
We've gotten an
Real quickly, Giles. Indiana is there are several states that do require you know, hospitals to educate parents about safe sleep, but Indiana isn't one of them. But like you know, one of the previous comments said, a lot of hospitals do it anyways.
Gotten an email from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. This listener said, have you talked about the helpfulness of nurse home visitation programs such as Nurse Family Partnership? They have been shown to make a positive difference. Danetta, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, so we actually, we partner with NFP, Nurse Family Partnership, and help fund some of the positions because, again, it's critical to get into the community and our, you know, different care management entities, they see this as well. They offer different systems that will help with whether that be calls or nurse visits. And at our system, we've actually started a program to where we are hiring people to get out to the home to help make sure we're providing education. Because many times when you get in the home and you see how they're living, what they're eating, it's a key opportunity to make some major impacts.
We work closely with Nurse Family Partnership as well. There's another organization, Healthy Families, that does in-home visits in addition to Nurse Family Partnership. So we certainly support home visitation.
Wesley, you're on the air. Oops, we just lost Wesley's call. Okay, we'll move. We've gotten a caller who didn't want to go on the air, who says that the one thing not being discussed is about planning to have only children that that people feel they can afford. Yeah, Dr. Wright, you're shaking your head. Go ahead.
I think there's a little judgment in that statement. I think that everybody has a plan for their lives. And oftentimes children are part of that plan. And I think that rather than to judge people on having families bigger than they can afford, our job is to help everyone to live their best lives.
Well, and Danetta, I would assume also people don't necessarily plan to be laid off or employed. They make projections, and then, or now, you know, obviously the market is taking another plunge today, which may have economic impacts. Is it difficult to make plans like that with all those variables?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell you one of our biggest years with births was during the major recession. And I think another piece to remember is that making sure women have access to contraception so that they can plan, because there is some limited access. I will say our partners at Medicaid, they have been amazing partners in working to allow us to get mothers the tools they need very soon after delivery so they can plan and space out pregnancies appropriately so that they're available to provide and have safe births in the future.
I'm going to give you each about 15 seconds because we're getting close on time here for it. And I'll start with Giles. What's one thing that this state could do to make a difference in dealing with this problem?
I think acknowledging some of the things we talked about, some of these social determinants of health. As I've done my reporting, I've heard a lot of critics say that the state does focus a lot on the mother's behaviors, the smoking, breastfeeding, et cetera, when they don't talk about some of these, larger issues, at play that are out of the women's hands.
Dr. Wright.
I think that the evidence has shown that the number one thing that positively impacts pregnancy outcomes is prenatal visits. So what we really need to do is strongly encourage and educate women on the need for routine, adequate prenatal visit, and we need to identify and eliminate the barriers to that.
Danetta.
I would say as a city, and as a state, we have to take this issue on ourselves. We cannot expect the politicians to fix this. This is going to be all of us coming to the table, offering ideas and helping with solutions.
I'd like to thank all three of my guests for a great conversation. Also tell our listeners that if they want to learn more, they can follow Happier Birthdays. That's going to be on YouTube as Product of Side Effects in the Indianapolis Recorder on December 11th and January 8th. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.